You are about to participate in the most ambitious culinary experiment ever imagined.
This competition is going to test everything.
Adapt quickly to anything. I mean anything. The wildest day of your life starts right now.
All new 24 and 24 Last Chef Standing. Sunday night at 8 on Food Network. Stream on Max.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Welcome to the Inside Track, brought to you exclusively by Americana Rhythm Music Magazine. I am your host and publisher, Greg Tutwiler. I am talking today with Southwestern Virginia's Ron Short. Ron and his band, the Possum Playboys, feature a vibrant country Americana sound, reminiscent of the bands that once traveled the two-lane highways of America, filling the dance floors of those iconic roadside honky-tonks. Thanks for joining me today, Ron. Man, I got to tell you, I really like this CD.
Oh, good. I'm really glad to hear that. Every musician likes to hear that their work is appreciated. That's why we do it.
Sure, yeah. So we were talking a little bit off air before we got started about yourself and your career, and let's kind of pursue that a little bit. Tell me a little bit about yourself and your career, how you got started in the music business, and how you got to where you are today.
Where I am today, sure luck that I'm still, But it's an incredibly involved story, as most people are. But I grew up with the music, and I was lucky enough to belong to one of those mountain families where music was just a central part of our lives.
Mm-hmm.
My uncles played, my mother and father, they couldn't work without singing, and I went to the old Edward Baptist Church, which is that old eternal sound of lined out hymn singing, that mm-hmm. goes back ages and ages. So I'm connected to a musical history that I'm just another chapter in. But I have worked most of my life, 30 years. I'm sort of probably the hardest working a musician find under the radar that you find. I've been doing this for traveling all over the world for a very long time.
Okay.
Performing with performing, playing music, and as a part of a internationally known theater company called Roadside Theater.
Okay.
And I did the writing for Roadside Theater. I was a playwright, and a musician, and all my plays were basically based on mountain music,
mm-hmm.
based on creation of music for characters, and so it was a kind of I try to tell people it was if Hank Williams wrote opera, opera. If Hank had wrote opera, I think it would have sounded like what Roadside Theater did with my work.
Okay.
And then, in addition, along the way, I continually, always had a band and recording music and. As a kind of second career in a way,
mm-hmm.
but for me it was really an expression of who I was. I needed that creativity. I needed the ability to just focus on music and not have to worry about writing music particularly for a character or for something,
mm-hmm.
but I wanted to write music that just expressed how I felt,
mm-hmm.
and was not necessarily going to be used and marketed in that kind of way.
Mm-hmm. Was the playwriting first then for you?
No, the music was first.
Okay.
The music was first, and they came to me, approached me about doing this work with them because of the music.
Mm-hmm.
And because I was writing stuff that appealed to people who were the directors and at that time, you know, working. And so the music was first, and I came attached to the music because that's what they wanted. And I brought that to the table. And then within that context, we also created musical CDs and musical shows that, traveled and performed. Really, all of we at the Smithsonian Festival, we went to Europe, to Sweden, Denmark, Germany, you know, all over the world, Ireland. We played everywhere, and in New York City, at Lincoln Center. I mean, those kind of places that, those iconic performance places for people recognize, but we played thousands of other places. So I learned performance craft. I learned about how to reach an audience, what kind of music as a writer, as a songwriter, who do you want to reach with this music? Who do you want to say this to? You know, what is it you're trying to say? And so you learn from, through crafting it. You know, you it's like being a studio musician. You do it over and over and over and over again. And so every performance is a practice, you know, it's a rehearsal. And that's how I have a, it's, so for me, I can't think of life separate from music. I can't think of it, and it's such a central part of my life. It just, it kind of affects and guides everything I do.
That's awesome.
From performing to and making my own CDs to producing things. I helped produce a wonderful two CD set, Music of Coal, which is a collection, best collection of coal mining songs I think ever made, for Lonesome Records. Then I did a thing called Music from Home, which was accompanying CD for a PBS show called History of Mountains and People. And so I've done that kind of thing as well. I produced the banjo album of a wonderful old-time banjo player down here who unfortunately was getting Alzheimer's, and we were going to lose him, and we did lose him. But we still have his music because of that. And I helped start a music school. I started the music school at Mountain Empire Community College, which is down here in Wise, Wise County. I was the person who instigated that because I had been traveling in Nova Scotia. And I would see all these young people playing music there, and I was really worried about the state of traditional music here in the mountains. Not just traditional music, but the fact that nobody was playing these instruments. You know, it's, you can do anything you want to with an instrument, but you have to learn to play it first. You can play any kind of music that you want. That instrument knows every song in the world if you can find it. And that's why I encourage young people. So, you see, it's a, for me, it's a long history of being involved with music. And so when I get to Hillbilly Highway, the latest CD, it's a reflection of all that. This CD, for me, is probably the first time I've ever written in a kind of autobiographical way. Songs that are kind of from, not just about the culture and the place, but really, really from my life. And the music I have on the CD is a kind of honoring the people that I learned from, you know, the kinds of music that influenced me over the years, throughout my life. The great respect I have for a songwriter like Hank Williams, who with three chords and three verses and two choruses can, you know, just write a novel. But then there, you know, then there's Van Morrison, who puts more passion into a song than in one song most of us can get in a lifetime of singing, you know. And then there's the, you know, the whole Muscle Shoals thing, that wonderful experience that I was able to learn from by watching and listening, seeing what these studio players are doing. So this CD reflects all of that.
I like the storytelling aspect that you have on there. The song "Don't You Remember Memphis"? Just listening to it, you can, having been in Memphis several times, you can almost kind of feel the experience of traveling through there and the story that you're telling behind that song. So I like your approach to the storytelling aspect of the songwriting.
Well, I grew up in an oral culture, you know, as a part. I mean, that is really the Appalachian culture, is in some ways like the Native American culture.
Mm-hmm.
So much of it was not written down. It was passed along from mouth, you know, from one person to the next.
Mm-hmm.
And storytelling was central to that. It is central, I think, to Southern culture as a whole, but more so in Appalachia than any place I know.
Mm-hmm.
People don't talk up here. They don't chit-chat. They tell stories, you know.
Yeah.
They still do that, and so I think that's why my songs reflect that aspect of things. And I do want to have people, I don't want the song just to be a song that describes something. I want them to do just exactly what you said. I want those songs to reach out and bring people into that environment and let them explore that. And that's why I write about different environments. Somebody would say to me, why are you an Appalachian musician writing a song about New Orleans?
Mm-hmm.
Because I want you to feel the same thing that I feel when I'm in New Orleans.
Yeah, yeah.
All those hidden stories, all those possibilities for that. You know, you sit in that Café du Monde and you see a young man reach over and wipe sugar from his girlfriend's face, and you've got a whole story there, that you can discover through music. And so that's what Hillbilly Highway is for me. It is the highway that I have traveled. It is a real highway that my kin people have traveled to leave the mountains and go to the city and change their lives and change the music they play. And that music then, you know, comes back and affects us here. And we are affected by the city. We become part of the city culture.
Yeah. Well, I think you really bring up a very interesting point about the Appalachian way of life and the culture and you know, the world is full of incredible songwriters, and yet I think someone like yourself, folks growing up with that Appalachian experience, really has a unique way of presenting a story that if you haven't lived that culture, it's not something that you can just make up. It's coming out of an experience of growing up in it.
Yeah, I think you're exactly right. You've hit upon the issue, and sometimes it is problematic that people want to play a style without having any living experience in it, you know. Or you want to, and I think what happens when you are a part of that culture is you don't tell about it, you live it. It's hard for me to even express it except through songs sometimes.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
This is a living experience.
Mm-hmm.
This is not just a, you know, and so I think there is a very real difference when you hear the song. You feel that the singer has been a part of that experience.
Mm-hmm, absolutely.
And they're not just telling you a story, they're revealing something about themselves.
Singing through it, yeah.
And when you reveal things to people, it allows them to, like you said about the song Memphis, to experience it for themselves.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I believe in the intelligence of my listeners, you know, people who like my music. I believe they are capable of expanding upon what I've done, taking it and adding new dimensions to it, you know. Everything I do in a way is intended to reach out, to communicate, and to connect with people. Mm. I want to create a kind of dialogue with my music.
Yeah.
I want you to have a dialogue with that CD.
Yeah.
I don't want you to just put it in and go down the road and not have be a part of that conversation.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah.
So that's what I was trying to do.
You mentioned something. I of course, I had some notes here before we started talking, and there was a line in your bio, and you kind of touched on it briefly a couple minutes ago, about the old regular Baptists lined out singing. I come from a rural area myself, and so I understand a little bit about that, but I think a lot of people that, again, kind of, you know, back to this whole idea of the Appalachian culture, that's a term that I don't think a lot of people know what you're talking about when you say that. Can you elaborate on that a little bit? What does that mean? And you know, when somebody is singing the lined out singing, what does that mean to folks?
It came about with the development of the Presbyterian Church in Northern Ireland. The Scots Irish who have been brought into the Scots who have been brought into Northern Ireland. To displace the Catholics, the Scots were Protestants, and they were intended to displace the Catholics from the land and take the place, and they did, and created, you know, the animosity that still exists out today between Protestants and Catholics. But those Scots-Irish, as they became known, they were turning a contrary, folks. They didn't join in the Anglican Church. They started this more hands-on kind of church in which they said they're just going to do it their way.
Mm-hmm.
And but they did where they weren't trained singers, they weren't musicians, and so they developed a style of singing in which they could have music in the church without having all the kinds of things that the richer, more trained and educated churches might have.
Mm-hmm.
And so they would take a song, and they would just forget the melody, basically just forget the melody.
Hmm.
and learn it by meter, if meter, mm-hmm. the poetic meter.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And then they learn to that poetic meter, to accent that. And then they would... even today in the Old Regular Baptist Church, the songbooks don't have any music whatsoever.
Mm.
And there are no songbooks. There are no songbooks in the pews. Only the baptized members of the church, the brothers and the sisters, as they're called, the brethren and the sisters, they sing.
Mm-hmm.
One person will take the book with the words. He'll sing out a line or say a line, kind of sing songy way. And then the rest of them will sing behind it. So he lines out the song.
Yeah.
It will be like, "Amazing Grace, how sweet the sound. Amazing Grace, how sweet the sound. Save a wretch like me that saved. He rests like me," and so on.
Hmm.
And they will sing all the songs that way, lined out.
It almost kind of has that soul feel.
Several folks would say it'll raise goosebumps on you big enough for a cat to suck. You know what I'm
saying? Yeah, yeah.
It is the most powerful today, and that's why I try to tell, when I sing, I remember that.
Mm-hmm.
I remember how, as a child, how soulful, how deep and moving,
yeah,
that music, that singing was.
Mm-hmm.
And I try to remember that, but I don't do that kind of singing commercial publicly, because it's still so deeply seated in me.
Mm-hmm.
that is a religious experience that
mm-hmm.
takes place in church.
Mm-hmm.
For the very same reason the Old Regular Baptist Church won't allow any cameras or any graven images, you know, in the church. It's still this is church, you know. That's outside world. You do this here and you do that there, and so I still respect that, and I think you have to have some. I think, you know, the problem is if you don't respect anything, it's very difficult to learn to respect yourself.
Sure, that's a good point. Yep.
You don't have any training. You don't have any understanding, and so I think you have to. I'm not saying you have to believe wholly in something like that. Or commit your whole life, but I believe you have to learn to respect. In the same way you learn to respect the old timers and their music. You don't say that's outdated and it's not valuable anymore. It's as valuable as it ever was, in some ways more so.
Sure.
Because what they have to teach, what that music can teach us about the craft of music, the learning to play. You know, every musician needs to learn their instrument. They need, whether it's a voice, whether it's a guitar or a banjo, you need to respect that instrument well enough to play it.
Yeah.
And so when you get up to perform, you don't embarrass it.
Yeah, that's a good point, yeah.
Even if you're willing to embarrass yourself.
Yeah,
Wow. So you have to have respect, and you have to put in the work.
Yeah.
And I think respect brings commitment, and commitment brings a kind of endurance. And if you can endure, you know, if you look at guys who have endured and continue to play music all their lives, I think generally in the world as a whole, there's just a kind of respect for them. You may not care about Willie Nelson singing, but there's no way you cannot respect what he has done in his life, in his lifetime, and the fact that he is still doing it. See, that's the thing for me about going from Old Regular Baptist to Hillbilly Highway. The Old Regular Baptist was a stop on the Hillbilly Highway for me. That's my roadmap. Music, as music is timeless. You know, music is timeless, and musicians, you know, in some ways, should be as well. I'm not saying that we've got to live forever, but I think we need to have a different sense of what a musician is, and understand that they are, in some ways, as timeless as the music. In some ways, Elvis is as vital as the day.
Sure, yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
The Carter family.
Yeah.
You know, three ordinary people from right here in Stock County where I live, you know, changed the world with their music. And we're back home to live in Stock County. Well, maybe I went to Nashville, but, you know, when the Nitty Gritty with Dirt Band found Maybelle, she was, her job, she was completely quit singing. Her job was setting up with old people at night as a kind of nurse's aide. That was Maybelle Carter's job until she was rediscovered. And when she was discovered again, she just picked that music up like it had always been there.
Yeah,
you know, it was always there.
She
had
lived
the music.
It. Yeah, yeah.
She had the music, and when they recorded her to dance, you got the whole thing. You didn't get, you know, just what the last few years are, where she was at the time they found her. That wasn't who she was.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, that was Maybelle.
Yeah.
That picking and singing is there. And so no, she's not going to live forever, but her style of guitar playing is changing the world.
Yeah, yeah.
That's what, you know, I'm not saying that every musician, but I think I believe that we need to, as musicians, and if we're going to play publicly, if we're going to declare that we're going to be a public musician, we need to dedicate ourselves to making sure that what we are communicating to people is the timelessness of the music. And if we then, as musicians ourselves, become timeless, that's fine. But but we are not. And we need to understand our job is to deliver up the music. It is through the music that we become timeless, mm-hmm. not it, you know. And I think that's a lesson maybe, I don't know if people understand that today or if it's just, you know, everything is in the moment. I was that way when I was much younger, of course, but you come to understand, especially if music is as important to you as it is to me,
mm-hmm.
That's all I can say. Then you come to think about it in a different way than just getting up and letting your ego completely guide you in what you're trying to do.
Well, it's amazing what the years of traveling through life will give you when you start looking back and trying to put some meaning and perspective to the whole journey.
Yeah, it is. But it is in some ways. I mean, I realize I'm talking in too much of a historical, philosophical way when I really want to say that the music is timeless. It's now. So when you present it with a new CD, you know, you listen to it now, it has that effect upon you now. You are working in the moment, that's for
mm-hmm.
sure. You know, you know that that's going to happen to people who are listening to it. But I think as a musician, you need to be more aware of that is not just the moment for you.
Mm-hmm.
It may be for the listener, but it certainly should not be for you. But
yeah.
But for me, you know, when I talk about keeping up that kind of a band that used to travel, you know, I know musicians from around here who were contemporaries of the Carters, and they would form little bands, and they would just go around and get in a car, and like today, and they didn't call it touring even, but it really was, and they would West Virginia, Kentucky, Tennessee, maybe, you know, maybe Georgia, North Carolina, whoever wanted to book them wanted a country band. They were a country band. They pulled out their hats and cowboy shirts and played country. If they wanted a Hawaiian band, oh yeah, they had a dobro in the group. They just changed clothes and put on. The guy told me that we had all white. We had white pants, white shoes, white shirts, and we couldn't. There was no laundry in those days. He said, and we just. When they got dirty, we'd just throw them away and buy some new ones. It's easier, you know. they would be a hillbilly band with a comic. They would be a Hawaiian band. They would be an old-time string band. They'd be a dance band. Or they would play pop stuff. You know, as musicians, the market wants to categorize you, you know. It's necessary for them to sell your product. Where do you put it? You know. But for these musicians, if you study, for example, most studios and most people don't understand that most of the music in America for a very, very long time and even still today came from studio musicians in Nashville and Muscle Shoals, the Wrecking Crew in L.A., who played on every rock and roll song. And they were jazz players, you know what I mean? They couldn't start out. They didn't even know what rock and roll was.
Yeah.
I mean, that was a term somebody came up with. They just knew they had to play.
Mm-hmm.
And then, so they were musicians. They played whatever was necessary for them to play, you know. And I'm still kind of, I don't have to worry so much about pleasing a label or whatever. I'm going to play music that pleases me and pleases an audience. And I'm going to play music that is going to be fun for you to hear and to listen to and become a part of. And I hope you will dance.
Yeah.
I hope you will. I mean, there's a song, you know, I hope you dance, but I really...
Yeah. Yeah.
There's so much fun to playing music for dancers.
Yeah.
You know, I love recording. I respect recording.
Yeah.
It's a whole art form that you have to learn as well. Mm-hmm. You know, for most people, going into the studio, you know, can be. But I admit it's hard work for me.
Yeah.
It's just you're thinking about music in a totally different way. You're creating music rather than playing music. You know, now when I play live, oh man, it's just so much different. There's an energy that you could, and you don't worry about the mistakes mm-hmm. so much. Mm-hmm. You know, because they're not so glaringly. Because you're moving on in the second.
Yeah.
You know, people are. So I'm not saying you don't play your best when you're playing live, but live music, it has an energy and a kind of worldliness about it. You know, in that it includes everybody that's listening to you in that moment, and makes them a part of it. It's such a wonderful thing for a musician to experience that interaction with the audience and to see people dancing to your music. If you can play music, that makes people lose their inhibitions and get up and dance, even though they may not be the best of dancers in the world. If you can cause people to relax and forget their worries and cares, and, you know, maybe even have a favorite beverage or two and get up and dance, there is, for a musician, you know, the only other accolade, I think, that is the higher calling than that is the act of singing at somebody's funeral. You know, mm-hmm. that sounds like strange, but it's two ends of the spectrum.
Mm-hmm.
If you're respected enough to somebody ask you, will you sing at my funeral? You know, that's that. Man, as a musician, as a singer, that's the highest accolade you can get, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And then the other is, man, you see some good old boy who does not want to dance. You can tell he does not want to get up, but that woman got him by the hand, and the next thing you know, they're lost in the music.
Sure.
For me, I can't think of anything better. That's why I love old-time music and old-time fiddle and banjo, because it's for dancing.
Yeah.
Music is for dancing, you know.
Yeah.
It really should be. I know there are times when you want to listen to, for me, the highest moment for a musician is when you have that interaction and your music is appealing enough or whatever, it's enough to cause people to get up off their butts and get out and get involved.
Well, Ron, this has been fascinating. I've really enjoyed hearing your story and talking about the music and just really some good stuff here. I hate it that we gotta wrap things up, but the CD is Hillbilly Highway. And how can people find you? How can they get a hold of a copy of the disc?
Well, these days the easiest way to find people is either on Facebook. I've got a couple of accounts on Facebook, a band page, and a Ron Short page. And if you just go to Possum Bebop for you, and way to get a hold of the band page, you can go to also to where you can listen to more music. It's easier to listen on Reverb Nation.
Okay,
it's ReverbNation.com. Ron Short and the Possum Playboys, and it'll take you to an app that plays a lot of music. I've got a lot of music up for people to listen to. I want them to hear the music before they commit their $9, you know, give them a chance to listen to some songs. That's the easiest way. And then you can order and go online and listen to sampling from CDBaby.com.
Okay.
Ron Short and Possum Playboys 2, I think it is. But anyway, if you go to CD Baby and just put in the name of the band or the name of the CD, Hillbilly Highway, it will pop up. We're on iTunes, on Amazon. I mean, it's
everywhere.
It's amazing. The idea for me at this point in time is as a musician, I'm so free because I'm not bound by those same kind of responsibilities to a label or the money. I have to pay the band, you know. Mm-hmm. Sure. I have to make enough to pay the band. I've got a wonderful band. These are local folk, wonderful singers and performers. So I love playing with a band. I just love playing with a band because it's like inner dialogue with yourself in a way. Mm-hmm. You get really good. Mm-hmm. And you get really good at it, you know. And so I love the band.
Yeah.
And that, you know, I wouldn't be Ron Short without Awesome Playboys at this point in time.
Yeah.
I'd have to be doing something else. So I appreciate you. I appreciate the opportunity to talk with you.
Thank you, Ron.
And I hope folks will go and listen, and I certainly hope they will like what I have tried to do.
Yeah.
And you know, because that's finally the bottom line. For me.
Thanks for tuning in to another edition of the Inside Track. We sure do appreciate you sticking around. Join us again real soon when we get together with another great artist and talking about their music. Have a great day.